I'm trying to figure it out. Okay.
It's a W. Oh,
yeah. Our second case this morning is United States against Wilson. Counsel for the defense, you may proceed. You might want to lift that microphone a little bit so it can be picked up. Thank you.
As this court stated in Osberger and Schur, where the findings do not disclose the single occasion on which a conviction is based, the Court of Criminal Appeals cannot conduct a factual sufficiency review or affirm the findings because it cannot determine which occasion the service member was convicted and of which occasion the service member was acquitted. The key issue in this case is whether the findings establish which of the charged diverse occasions provided the basis for the conviction. The Army Court was incorrect when they stated the findings unquestionably disclose the single occasion on which the conviction is based, because the findings of guilty and not guilty do not disclose the conduct upon which each of them were based. The Army Court erred by finding as fact an allegation in a specification for which the fact finder below has found the appellant not guilty. Findings at trial need to be clear of any ambiguity. It is the military judge's responsibility to ensure that the findings are clear, and if they fail to do so, service courts cannot rectify that error by digging through the record to try themselves to determine what appellant was convicted of. An appellant has a substantial right to a full and fair review of his conviction under Article 66C, and an ambiguity in the findings results in material prejudice to that right. If you believe that service courts can look beyond the findings to the record for the intent of the parties, in this case, no clear intent regarding either incident can be determined. The clearest place to look is the rebuttal by the trial counsel. That sheds the most light that it is unclear to the trial counsel that only one rape conviction was possible. Trial counsel clearly argues in the rebuttal that the statement by the appellate amounts to rape. Trial counsel argued he admitted to rubbing his penis against her vagina and in between her labia. That by itself constitutes penetration. That by itself constitutes rape under the UCMJ. And that is regarding the statement by the appellant. But he goes on to argue, what we have is more. We have RC talking about how she was penetrated, how it hurt. And that is from RC's testimony in the bedroom. It's clear that he's discussing and trying to get a conviction for both the bathroom and the bedroom incident. What is crystal clear is trial counsel's asking for the court to enter a finding of guilty for specification of charge 2 without exception and substitution. Trial counsel state because the government has met its burden. Nothing after this point in the record clears up that ambiguity. There is no way to know that the military judge is considering one instance of rape until she speaks after trial counsel's finished rebuttal. Military judge says, you would agree that at most it would be guilty except the words on diverse occasions. Trial counsel just agrees. And again, there's no way to know that when trial counsel agrees, that he's even agreeing with the same incidents the military judge is talking about, because nowhere do they say bedroom or bathroom incidents.
Do you think that the parties agreed that, I mean, it seems that the military judge was convinced they were only talking about one, the trial counsel agreed with that, and even the defense counsel, in his closing argument, said that they were only talking about one. Do you think they were in agreement as to that, and just because of the record is kind of cold and we're sitting here so far away, it's difficult for us to see, or do you think there was confusion there as well?
Your Honor, I think there was confusion there as well.
And what do you base that on?
I base it off of the entire record. You have RC getting on the stand, and you have trial counsel listing the testimony regarding the bathroom or the bedroom incident. But also, trial counsel elicits testimony regarding the bathroom incident, because he asked about the penetration in the bathroom that matches up with a statement from the accused, where he asked about him rubbing his penis on her vagina, and if force was used, which shows an intent to go towards the however slight standard. Then you go on to look at the argument by the trial counsel. And trial counsel in argument argues for both. And again, at the end of just the argument, says he's met his burden and asks for conviction on both.
But didn't it seem that the trial counsel was mixing up the bathroom incident and kind of conflating it with the bedroom incident?
It's clear that that's not what the trial counsel was doing when you look at the rebuttal. And you look at how the trial counsel laid out argument in rebuttal. When he specifically talks about the incident in the bathroom from the appellant's statement and how that meets rape under the UCMJ, and then goes on to say, but what we have is more. Meaning, I've met my burden also for the bedroom. And goes on to argue how the bedroom amounts to rape. And then at the end asks for a conviction on both, Your Honor.
What's your response to the government's argument that when the statement, the appellant's statement was read, that the penetration that he referred to there, however slight, was a general, didn't necessarily mean that he was talking about the bathroom incident, that it was more of a generalized statement that they could then use to support the bedroom incident?
In the appellee's brief where they discussed that, they left off two key colloquies between Special Agent Heintzman and the appellant, because right before you have that, you have the special agent asking, during one of the incidents in the bathroom, you stated that Renee said, ouch, that hurts. What prompted Renee to say that? That's Wilson Joint Appendix 43. And then you have the appellant stating, she said it while I was rubbing my penis on her genitals. I wasn't even looking down there. There's no break in the colloquy that occurs to where he finally admits that after the special agent clarifies the difference between vaginal canal and external labia, where he finally admits that he entered the external labia meeting the however slight standard. So there's no break in that statement, and it's clear there's no break.
Thank you.
Counsel, if this had been a trial before members, we'd be dealing with the issue of whether the military judge properly instructed the members with respect to the varying forms of evidence and what their responsibilities would be in terms of finding the diverse incidents or a single incident. This is a judge-alone trial. What error, if any, did the judge commit in this context?
Your Honor, the error that the military judge committed was it would have been very easy for the military judge, as stated in United States versus Schur, which was a judge alone case, it would have been very easy for the military judge, after she entered her findings, to state whether it was the bedroom or bathroom incident that she convicted the appellant of and which one she acquitted the appellant of. And she did not do that when she entered her findings in this case, which amounted to legal error and amounted to the Court of Criminal Appeals not being able to conduct an article 66.
Doesn't Schur say that in that case we look to the record to determine which incident was the basis of the conviction?
In Schur, there were two specifications that were charged with diverse. One became clear because of the markings that the military judge did in the specification. Specification 5, the military judge was able to cross out, I believe it was Tokyo, Japan, and then a date, which left clear just from the findings what Appellant Schur was convicted of. However, that wasn't the case for Specification 3. The way I read Schur, Your Honor, is that you can't go beyond findings. That if the findings are unclear, that's where you should stop.
Well, what about the language that says, because the record contains evidence of only two LSD uses when the what about that? What about that reference to the record?
But it seems clear, even though there is a reference to reading the record, it seems clear from Schur that when you look at just the findings,
But what about also ensure, based on the record, we are unable to discern which use was a single incident that formed the basis for this finding? Doesn't that suggest that the CCA or this court can look to the record to see if it can discern the basis for the finding in a judge alone case, at least?
That case does seem to give an indication that maybe you look to the record just to see if there's an intent from the parties. And if this court doesn't want to draw a line in the sand, in this case, that the finding should be where it stops. Reasonable three judges can clearly stop this type of ambiguities from occurring, then you can look to the record for the intent of the parties. But in this case, the record's not clear regarding the intent of the parties.
What's the standard of review here?
The standard of review here, Your Honor, is de novo.
And what's the remedy?
The remedy would be to dismiss specification 2 of charge 2 with prejudice, because double jeopardy attached to the findings to both what the appellant was acquitted of and what he was convicted of, bedroom and bathroom incident.
And if there were a driveway incident during the same time period, would he be subject to trial on that?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, can you repeat your question?
If you are correct on the law and it is dismissed, you said it would be dismissed and the double jeopardy would apply to the bedroom and bathroom incidents. If it turned out that there was also a driveway incident during the same time period that was originally charged, could he be tried on that incident?
If there was another instance of rape that
Correct.
He committed during this time?
The time period.
If that instance, statute of limitations hasn't run on that. If there had been another instance.
I don't know anything you don't know, by the way. I'm just asking you a legal question. That'd be known as a hypothetical.
if there's another instance out there that appellant has, that statute hasn't run on and wasn't the basis for the diverse occasions, then yes, he could be tried on that. Yes, Your Honor.
The double jeopardy applies to the bedroom and the bathroom incident from
to the two
full
instances.
Stop.
Yes,
in your view. Okay, thank you.
To explore the double jeopardy a bit more, if the military judge, and if this had been a case before members and the military judge had erred in failing to properly instruct the members on the diverse incidents versus the findings by exceptions and substitutions, would we be prohibited from concluding that the military judge erred and that the case could be remanded for a rehearing with proper instructions?
Your Honor, I'm not sure that I understand.
Let's say we have the exact same situation we have here, but it's a case with members. And if we looked at that case and said the military judge erred because the military judge gave no instructions as to, or gave inadequate instructions as to how to distinguish the diverse incidents from a single incident, and came out with the findings that we have here and say it's ambiguous, we can't figure out what went on because the military judge didn't give proper instructions, would we be precluded in that case from, instead of dismissing with prejudice, saying the military judge here gave improper instructions, therefore the case is remanded for the possibility of a hearing with a properly instructed panel?
Yes, Your Honor, it would be prohibited, because if you ended up with the exact same results, meaning an ambiguity, and you have the appellant who is acquitted of something, RCM 924A and 1102C1, once findings of a court-martial have been announced, any finding that amounts to a finding of not guilty is not subject to reconsideration or post-trial session, such as a proceeding and revision. And that also was stated in the United States versus Osberger by this court.
And is that a rule of statute and regulatory rule, or is that a constitutional rule? That is, if we were in a federal district court and the same thing happened, would retrial be prohibited based upon inadequate instructions?
Your Honor, if we were in federal court, retrial would also be prohibited because of the fact that you have an acquittal and jeopardy attached to the findings. And since we do not know what appellant was acquitted of, you can't send it back because we're putting twice in jeopardy.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions, save the rest for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Counsel for the government.
May it please the court. My name is Captain Sarah Rykowski, and along with Colonel Denise Lind, I represent the government in this matter. Appellant's right to a factual sufficiency review was not compromised because the findings in his case were not fatally ambiguous. Appellant was tried by military judge alone, and the record of trial clearly demonstrates that the evidence concerned a single offense of rape. It is this lone offense of rape, the rape in the bedroom, that the parties argued, and the military judge indicated that that was the only occasion of rape she was going to consider prior to deliberations.
On the record, page 90, a trial counsel is doing closing arguments. Is it the government's view that what trial counsel describes does not amount to rape, or that it is evident from the record that what the trial counsel describes occurred in the bedroom?
Your Honor, the government's position...
And I'm talking lines 15 through 21.
Lines 15 through 21, the trial counsel's use of that admission from his sworn statements was to argue the rape in the bedroom, Your Honor.
So it is the government's position that what is described there is, in fact, rape. Yes, this is a part.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, but second, it is your view that the what is described there occurred in the bedroom?
Yes, Your Honor.
And can you indicate where in the record that's established?
Yes, Your Honor. If you look at the trial counsel's opening statement, he begins... At no point during trial counsel's opening statement, closing argument, or rebuttal does he refer to two occasions of rape. And it is clear from the facts he discusses in all three statements which rape, which factual scenario he is discussing, and that is the rape in the bedroom. The trial counsel opens his opening...
Is it, with respect to that, does the trial counsel not describe both what occurred on lines 15 to 21, as well as what occurred when the victim was in either a fetal position or a dog-like position?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, could you restate your question?
You said there is only one incident that the trial counsel describes.
Yes, correct? Your
Honor. Is it your view, then, that the description that is provided on lines 15 through 21 is the same incident as the incident the trial counsel describes as either occurring in a fetal position or a dog position?
Yes, Your Honor.
You're saying they're one and the same?
Yes, Your Honor.
It's all one incident?
Yes, Your Honor.
I understand your position. Now continue with the answer as to why we know that.
Thank you, Your Honor. The trial counsel, in his opening statement, immediately addresses RC's recollection of those events, and he indicates in that opening statement that his reference to appellant's statement is only as the facts clarify the critical details of RC's recollection of those events. Given that RC only references and remembers, recollects one occasion of rape and describes that rape in detail during her testimony, and the trial counsel referenced events where her teddy bear wasn't enough, the incident where she asked for her teddy bear was while appellant was raping her in the bedroom, according to her testimony. And again,
who chose to charge this as a diverse offense case?
Presumably the trial counsel, Your Honor.
Well, I presume it would be whatever military officer preferred the charges, and presumably the commander, who then referred the case to trial, thought there was sufficient evidence of diverse charges to refer it to trial. And at what point in the proceedings did the trial counsel say, well, these officers are mistaken, we only have evidence of one offense here?
It appears to be at the opening, at the very beginning of his opening statement, Your Honor.
He says there's only one offense here?
No, Your Honor, but he only references.
Did he ever move to correct or amend, have the charges amended?
He could have, but he did not, Your Honor.
So why shouldn't we assume that everything that the trial counsel said at trial should be viewed through the lens of the two military officers who decide that this case should go to trial, the officer preferring the charges and the officer referring the charges? Aren't they the people in charge of the military justice system?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what did the trial counsel do, if anything, to disabuse the court of the notion that those officers had a proper legal basis for preferring and referring those charges?
They review the evidence that they have vis-a-vis the charges that they have preferred, the charges that have been preferred, and presumably drop the charges upon which they had no evidence or don't believe they have enough evidence sufficient to achieve a conviction, Your Honor.
But until the military judge at some point said we only have one, the trial counsel never did anything in that regard, did he?
Correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Counsel, can I draw your attention to pages 43 and 44 of the joint appendix, which is the sworn statement of the appellant? And where in there does he say, or where in there do you get the impression that he is talking about the bedroom incident?
Your Honor, it is not the government's position that he is specifically talking about the bedroom. The government's position is the fact is that the admission itself is neither temporally specific or location specific. Therefore, the trial counsel uses that two-line admission, the question and the answer.
What is it specific about? Did you do whatever you did while in the bathroom?
It is the space and time, the language in the statements, coupled with Special Agent Heintzman's testimony on the record, which indicates that while they were discussing events in the bathroom, he denied, in essence, while saying that could have happened. I remember her saying, ouch, yes, that hurts, now I stopped. Special Agent Heintzman changes his course of questioning, and then the admission comes out. But the admission itself does not in itself contain any location or time indicative information. So the trial counsel inexpertly or otherwise used that statement to argue the rape in the bedroom.
But I want to know what the government's position is today. And the references to penetration on page 44, is it the government's position that those do not refer to the incident in the bathroom, but instead refer to the incident in the bedroom?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's the only way of reading that?
Yes, Your Honor. But
Have been legally sufficient to convict him of the bathroom event.
No, Your Honor, if you step back to his more specific, location-specific, that could have happened. I remember her saying, ouch. In essence, he's saying, no, I didn't do it there.
Well, what about in the bathroom incident where the victim testified that she remembered the sexual molestation in the bedroom, but didn't specifically remember penetration? Is that not corroboration of his admission, if in fact that referred to the bathroom incident?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't follow your question.
Okay. Let's assume that he's talking about the bathroom incident here.
Yes, Your Honor.
And let's assume that when he's talking about the slight penetration, he's talking about the bathroom incident, and that it is an admission to rape.
Yes,
because
sir.
It's penetration no matter how slight.
Yes, sir.
When the victim testified, she said she remembered the sexual molestation in the bathroom, but she couldn't remember whether or not there was penetration. Now, there only has to be very slight corroboration. He's admitted it. She remembers that there was an incident, doesn't remember the penetration. Isn't that sufficient for a conviction?
No, Your Honor, because when asked, R.C. unequivocally says she was raped only once, and that occurred in the bedroom, and she also said the only time she experienced pain, ergo penetration, occurred in the bedroom.
Now, just so we get it straight, if there is very slight penetration, there need not be pain. Is that correct?
Correct. But
would you agree that it's possible that a layman might not realize that penetration, however so slight, constitutes rape?
Yes, Your Honor.
And would you agree that if we disagree with you about how you read the appellant's statement, that the CCA was wrong?
No, Your Honor, because what if you look at the sworn statement, the way it was used at trial, again, we can look at the entire record of trial to determine the fact finder's intent here. So if this court determines the findings in this case are on their face ambiguous, this court can turn to the entire record of trial, and the progression of evidence begins with the sworn statement, but ends ostensibly in terms of the actual nitty-gritty of this case, as the defense counsel argues, with RC's testimony. And if you look at her testimony, she describes in very excruciating, painful detail how she was assaulted, how she was raped doggy style on the floor in the bedroom. And you look at the only questions the military judge asks of RC that have to do with more than where did you live and who did you live with are regarding the facts of the rape in the bedroom. That is the rape, that is the offense that all of the parties understood was still on the table. If you look at then stepping from her sworn statement, let me go back to the military judge's question. She asked, what were you wearing on this occasion when the accused penetrated you? And you said you were curled up on the floor by the door. Describe to me how you felt something hurt. Did your stepfather stand you up or did you move? But you remember him penetrating you from behind rather than the front.
But all of those questions are obviously about the bedroom incident.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor. And then if you go from those questions and RC's testimony to the closing arguments of the parties, it again is very clear. It's clear that the offense of rape concerns the remaining offense if there were more than one before, is the rape in the bedroom. The trial counsel begins his closing argument discussing the facts of the bedroom rape, referencing RC's request for her teddy bear. Again, she asked for her teddy bear, as she testified, during the rape in the bedroom. He uses that non-location-specific admission to corroborate the bedroom rape. He never steps away from the bedroom rape. Everything he says goes to arguing the bedroom rape, and that distinguishes this case.
Provided you believe that the discussion between lines 15 to 21 is related to the bedroom rather than the bathroom.
Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, can you clarify one thing for me? On Joint Appendix 8 in the trial counsel's opening argument, there he says the accused placed her on his bed, helped remove her clothes, knelt behind her, and raped her. Now, where does that come into the situation that we're talking about?
Yes, Your Honor. That would be a question the military judge, a fact, the location on the bed as opposed to the floor, is a question that the military judge clarifies with RC on the record. So you were on the bed. No, I was on the floor by the door.
So that's a misstatement by...
That's a misstatement by the trial counsel.
Okay.
The most important element of the trial counsel's closing is his request of the military judge to find appellant guilty of raping, he says, his stepdaughter, we believe that's a typo, his stepdaughter, while in Colorado Springs and her parents' bedroom. At that point, there's no objection by either party, or the defense counsel or the military judge. Then, if you move to the defense counsel's closing argument, he references a lone incident, this particular incident, and ask the court to note that it's very clear this only pertains to one incident, not on diverse occasions as alleged in the charge. And then the facts he discusses and the facts he argues point to him arguing the bedroom rape as that specific incident. She said, he argues, well, my memory is not all that clear. She doesn't remember certain details which might or might not be understandable, such as clothing worn. She says that appellant was speaking but doesn't remember exactly what was said. The only questions regarding clothing come from the military judge, and they are regarding the rape in the bedroom And that is the only occasion R.C. testified about where she doesn't remember what appellant was said, what appellant was saying, although he was speaking to her. The defense counsel goes on. She does remember certain incidences. When asked about this particular incident, we just heard a girl saying, well, it hurt, and I'm sure he penetrated me to some degree. The only event that R.C. testified hurt to some degree was when appellant raped her doggy style in the bedroom of his house. But she wasn't looking at him, according to her own testimony. It was hurting somewhere in the vaginal area. We know that there was something going on back there, but we don't know whether the however slight standard was met. Again, the only offense which occurred from behind, essentially, appellant was behind R.C. and couldn't see what was going on, was the rape in the bedroom. He never leaves off arguing a single incident. It's only when the trial counsel's rebuttal asks for a more, again, a general finding of guilt without reference to the bedroom specifically, that's when the military judge jumps in. Her reaction indicates that prior to that, she understood the only offense that remained for her to deliberate on was the rape in the bedroom.
Okay. What specific point in trial on the record do you point to as the time in which this was changed from a diverse offense case to a single offense case? And I'm not talking about the finding itself, but at what point do you see all parties to the case, the military judge and the two counsel, focusing on a single incident?
The focus on a single incident becomes the clearest, while it might not be the first point, when R.C. testified unequivocally that
I'm not talking about the testimony. I'm talking about the parties. At what point are the parties in agreement that there is a single incident? We'll worry next about which single incident.
At the close of the evidence in the case, Your Honor.
And what is said at that point?
The fact that both the trial counsel and the defense counsel reference a single offense, a single instance, and never use language indicating multiple offenses.
And at what point does the military judge determine that there is a single offense at issue prior to the issuance of findings?
Most clearly on her reaction to the defense counsel's rebuttal.
Okay. Now, after the military judge, did either party specifically ask for an amendment of the findings?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. So after the military judge amended the charge and issued the findings, what opportunity did the defense counsel have to raise any objection at that point?
The defense counsel had the opportunity and chose not to do so, and the government's position is that his failure to do so indicates a lack of confusion regarding the findings and thereby agreement with those findings. In fact, it's not even brought up during sentencing. As an Augsburger,
the defense counsel should have asked for additional counts of rape to be affirmed, is what you're saying?
No, Your Honor. What the government's position is that both the trial counsel...
That's effective assistance of counsel.
Your Honor, it actually is in the Augsburger case that the defense counsel asked the military judge for clarification, and the military judge refused to do so. So,
what was the harm to the defense at this point, and what would be the purpose of any particular motion?
Your Honor, it would be a defense counsel has two choices, and the trial counsel could have stood up and said, Your Honor, as in United States versus True, the trial counsel could have said, Your Honor, which one is it, if there were two still on the table, but everybody understood in this case there's only one, there was no confusion. The defense counsel has two options at this point in the trial. He can remain silent and wait and raise the issue on appeal, as we have here, or he could, if he is truly confused, that defense counsel should stand up and say, Your Honor, you know, my client needs to know what he was convicted of. If a defense counsel is truly confused, although he has no duty to do so, per se, on one line of he has the two options, but on the one hand, a defense counsel who truly does not know what his client has been found guilty of has an issue that he should resolve.
Is it fair to say that the pivot of your case is the victim's testimony that she was raped once?
Your Honor, it's the parties, to include the military judge's reaction to that testimony. We are not asking this court as insider to, as was forbidden insider to perform a factual analysis and say simply because the evidence on that offense was stronger, the Army Court chose that one to affirm. It's simply that all parties reacted to that testimony so strongly that testimony is indeed the pivot. The victim was 5 to 7 years old at the time of these offenses.
And what evidence in the record is there that the victim had a legal understanding of what the definition of rape was?
Your Honor, there is no, at no time does anyone go over what the definition of rape was with the particular victim.
Thank you.
You may take the time you need to conclude.
Thank you, Your Honor. If this court should determine that the findings in this case...
Go ahead and start again.
The findings in this case are not fatally ambiguous, and therefore appellant's right to a factual sufficiency review by the Army Court was not compromised because the record of trial clearly demonstrates that only one offense remained for the military judge to deliberate on, and it is this offense the parties argued, and on this offense the testimony of the trial concerned. However, if this court does determine that the findings in this case are ambiguous, this court may now send this case back for a proceeding and revision pursuant to RCM 1102. Wherefore, the government respectfully requests this court uphold the Army Court's ruling or, in the alternative, order a proceeding revision pursuant to RCM 1102.
How can we do an order of provision and revision, proceeding and revision, if in fact there is a not guilty finding?
Your Honor, the RCM 1102 in the new manual for courts martial issued in 2008 permits this court to order a proceeding and revision, sending this case back to the convening authority and then back to the fact finder to clarify an ambiguous action of the fact finder in this case.
So there's no constitutional issues involved when a not guilty plea or not guilty verdict is found and it can be sent back and redone?
Yes, Your Honor. There's no problem with that.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Does the defense have rebuttal?
Counsel, could you respond to the government's position on a proceeding and revision?
Yes. Your Honor, the 2008 manual, 924A 1102C1, specifically says that once the findings of a court-martial have been announced, any finding that amounts to the finding of not guilty, and that's the key here, is that it's not guilty. There's an acquittal in this case, which at that point, double jeopardy attaches, and it would put the appellant in jeopardy. Nowhere does any party in the record state a conviction for either the bedroom or bathroom incident. What is clear is that two instances were introduced by the trial counsel and at the close rebutted by trial counsel. He specifically asked for a conviction of specification charge two without exception and substitution. The military judge does not mention that they're talking about one instance until after the rebuttal, where she says, you would agree we're only talking about one instance. Trial counsel says, yes, Your Honor. Never is there a mention of whether that instance is the bedroom or bathroom, or whether the military judge or trial counsel is even talking about the same instance.
Do you think that it's at least a fair reading of the record that they are all talking about one instance?
No, Your Honor, I do not believe that it is a fair reading of the record.
Because?
About one instance. Because you have trial counsel introducing two instances. Trial counsel introduced a statement that clearly talks about an instance that could amount to rape in the bathroom by appellant. He also elicits that testimony from RC, where he asks her about the penetration in the bathroom, which corroborates the statement from the accused, and if it was, how forceful it was, trying to meet that however slight standard.
Did he specifically ask about the penetration in the bathroom, or did he just ask about other incidents?
Your Honor, he did not specifically say the bathroom in that colloquy between him and RC. However, what he did ask about rubbing the penis on the vagina, that matches up with the statement, and you could infer that it is the bathroom incident that they're talking about. You also have Special Agent Heintzman talking about the statement, and which goes to the bathroom incident. So clearly both are brought out and introduced. Clearly both are argued by trial counsel and defense counsel. So both are in the record, both were brought out. The Army Court was incorrect when they stated that the findings unquestionably disclose a single occasion on which the conviction is based. The findings by the military judge do not establish which of the charged diverse occasions provided the basis for the appellant's conviction. Because of the ambiguous finding, jeopardy attached to both the bedroom and bathroom incident, and the findings of specification charged two must be dismissed with prejudice. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, and we thank counsel for both parties for your presentation today. The case is now submitted, and the court will be in recess until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow morning.